Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One. I'm Mark Daly, I'm your host, and it is time to get ready to go racing again. We have the British Grand Prix coming up this weekend, and as of the time of recording, we are only now about 4.5 hours away from FP1 at Silverstone. So after a week off, definitely in the mood to get back to some Formula One racing. And of course, there has been plenty of things going on in the Formula One world this week. And the biggest story of the week thus far is Racing Point driver Sergio Perez is now in self-isolation after testing positive for COVID-19. So obviously that is a bit of a shock. Well, more than a bit of a shock, quite shocking that it had happened at all, but apparently his first test was inconclusive. He went for a second test and it came back. So anyways, the good news is that Perez is fine. He doesn't have any symptoms, but the way that the rules are, the health protocols in the United Kingdom at the moment is anybody testing positive for COVID-19 has to go into self-isolation for 10 days. So that means he's going to miss the British Grand Prix this weekend and the 70th anniversary Grand Prix next weekend. Really disappointing, obviously. Racing Point have a very competitive car this year, and Perez, he's acquitted himself quite well in several situations so far this year, but health and safety comes first, and hopefully this, nothing goes wrong for Sergio, and that he's back before too long. And obviously, we hope that he stays healthy and he doesn't develop any symptoms of COVID, but certainly a very big surprise when I saw that first thing this morning when I started to scroll through the news on my phone after waking up. So they are going to need a driver, obviously, Racing Point. And there was an expectation that perhaps this could happen at some point during the season once Formula One had worked out all the, this COVID bubble and everything that they were going to work within once, the season got up and running, which has almost been a month ago now. I mean, what was it, July 5th? We had the first Grand Prix at Spielberg, and we're already off to round number four. So time does certainly fly, but the speculation was that a driver could and probably would test positive for COVID at some point during the year, and reserve drivers would probably come into come into play at some point. But it's looking as though Nico Hülkenberg, the former Racing Point / Force India driver, I guess obviously would have been Force India when Nico was still there, is going to take over and take Sergio's seat for the next couple of races after after Perez's obvious positive test. So his most recent drive was at the 2019 season finale in Abu Dhabi when he was driving for Renault. He has to go and clear a COVID-19 test to make sure he is not carrying the virus, and then he also has to finalize some sort of contract or agreement with Racing Point to fill in for Perez forever long he's needed. So probably for the next two races at least. So they do not have a dedicated driver that is nominated or appointed to fill in at races. So they share Mercedes reserve drivers Esteban Gutierrez and Stoffel Van Dorn, both of whom have raced in Formula One. Van Dorn is not on site at Silverstone because he's in Berlin preparing for the Formula E finale. And Gutierrez actually has not raced in a Grand Prix since the end of 2016. So it's been a little bit of time. I mean, Van Dorn, obviously, he didn't do anything too exciting in Formula One when he's driving for McLaren, but he was there, of course, when they were really at their lowest point when they were struggling with McLaren. Although I still maintain that he had a very, very good debut when he filled in for Fernando Alonso at the Bahrain Grand Prix a couple of years ago after Fernando had that horrible crash at on the first lap at the Australian Grand Prix. Anyways, Stoff came in, scored a single point in P10 in his debut, and obviously he's done quite well in Formula E as well. So obviously he's out of the picture, but it looks like Hulk is going to be the guy that comes back and fills in for his own old team for a couple of races. And honestly, I mean, he was the longest running driver in Formula One that was never to score a podium before he left Formula One at the end of last year. And yeah, I mean, he's got a Le Mans victory under his belt, and I think there was a lot more expectations that had this guy had a decent car that he could challenge for podiums and be a score points more regularly than he did. And that's why I'm a little bit surprised that. Especially that Haas did not maybe snap him up at the end of last year. Then it was sticking with Kevin Magnussen and Romain Grosjean after last year. I mean, Grosjean to me still seems like a bit of a square peg in a round hole in Formula One. And I thought maybe he might be a guy that got a look at that team, but obviously not. But at least he's going to get a couple of races filling in for Perez. So we'll be looking to see what Nico Hülkenberg can do. As long as he manages to clear some of these hurdles that stand in his way, and he's going to have to get up to speed, no pun intended, very, very quickly. What a team to fortunately land in. And if he manages to get into the points, or heaven forbid, score a podium this week at the British Grand Prix or next weekend, that would be absolutely amazing. And he's got the car to do it. I mean, both Lance Stroll and Sergio Perez have been very competitive in the first three races of the year, and at least on Hülkenberg's behalf, I mean, sure, he's not in Formula One right now, but I mean, it really isn't all that long ago, and sure, he didn't have the benefit of preseason testing or the benefit of racing the first couple of races, but most of these, well, all these guys basically sat all those months at home as basically the entire world was locked down during the spring. And there was nothing really going. I mean, there was some limited testing in older spec cars, or some of these media days that cars were allowed to run their current 2020 cars, although with a different compound tire than the usual racing compounds that they get. So I don't really think that, at least from my standpoint, that Nico Hülkenberg is at a huge disadvantage to the other 19 guys in the field right now. Obviously, he's might be lacking a little bit of conditioning since he hasn't been racing the last month. But when the drivers came back after the lockdown or the work halt was lifted a couple of months ago, I mean, they all had to get back into it and condition and everything like that. So it's going to be a steep learning curve, but he is an F1 veteran and a pretty decent racing driver, so definitely one to keep your eye on this weekend at the British Grand Prix. So Michael Massey, the race director at Formula One, says cautioned that they should not become complacent due to the ongoing threat from COVID-19 in the run-up to the doubleheader at Silverstone over the next couple of weekends here. Anyways, Massey had to say earlier this week, quote, "I think as a sport and as an industry, we should be very proud of what we have achieved over these first three events. Considering the time that obviously we've had collectively, particularly between the FIA and together with F1 in developing the return to racing plan, the methods, the protocols, the support from everyone about the pit lanes, journalists, support categories has been fantastic. Yes, it's been a learning experience for us all. There's been minor tweaks along the way, but overall, as a process and as a structure, I think we're about there. I'm proud of what we've done." There's certainly a big level of confidence. I think one part is not to be complacent. It is probably the big part, end quote. And absolutely, I think that what they've done is absolutely amazing. I mean, we've obviously learned, and I'm using the royal we here, I mean, humanity as a whole, we've learned quite a bit about COVID-19 over the past several months, and ever since it really burst into Western society earlier in March and really snowballed and took everybody by surprise, despite there being obvious outbreaks in China, in Iran, in Italy, and then into Spain and France and around the world eventually. But I mean, we're in a much, much different place now compared to where we were the middle of March at the Australian Grand Prix when one of the McLaren team members tested positive for COVID. I mean, we're all going to look back at this time years from now once hopefully we put this all behind us. What a strange and bizarre and unsettling time it was. But compared to where we are now, even though cases are surging in certain parts of the world and it's far from over, I mean, there is a bit of normality that has come back to the world in general. I mean, we've kind of learned how to live with it in certain situations. I do find in general that the messaging can be a little bit confusing. And I'm not really going to get into that debate that, yes, you should wear a mask or you know you shouldn't wear a mask. But that's a completely different topic. But I do find it interesting. I mean, where I live right now, they've announced a full return to school for the kids starting in September. Masks aren't going to be mandatory, but I mean, they're going to have physical distancing and all that. But yet, you know, I can't go into the grocery store and, you know, they're counting the amount of people that they're letting in. I can't go into Costco, you know, just down the road here without wearing a mask. So, I mean, these things I find a little bit confusing. However, that's a bit of a tangent. Just in general, just talking about where Formula One is, I mean, if we go back those 3-4 months ago, especially going back to Melbourne when that it was announced that, you know, the McLaren person had tested positive, I mean, the whole thing rapidly started falling apart. I mean, it's come out since that they'd made an agreement to race and all these sorts of things before it was ultimately canceled and, you know, everybody was kind of left wondering, you know, what is going on. But everything was getting canceled at that point. I mean, other sports, concerts, conferences, schools, whatever. I mean, it was a very, very strange time. But now you fast forward a couple of months now that we've we know a little bit more about how this virus acts. And, you know, there's it's been studied to a certain degree. I mean, there's vaccine trials underway around the globe. And the way that Formula One has come up with this plan, and they've implemented this plan over the past month, and obviously the run up to the season itself, what with you know, when they restarted working in the factories and design offices at the different teams and all those things, that is very, very different. I mean, obviously I'm very concerned for Sergio Perez and for anybody for that that matter. You don't have to be a famous Formula One driver who contracts COVID-19, but it is interesting now to see that whereas it brought the whole circus to a grinding halt just a couple of months ago, that it's Perez that's just been isolated and removed, and then a very small select pod of people that were in his immediate bubble within the team. So hopefully that is, you know, it's been contained. It won't spread any further. And from what I read about Perez, it's not like he is, you know, he's overtly sick. He's running a temperature. He's coughing. He's got all these, you know, different things that that people, you know, show when they're sick with you know, with COVID or in cases not. But I believe the way that the test work is that there were two genes of COVID that that showed up in his test. In the first test, only one of these genes tested positive, and then the other one did not, so it was inconclusive. And then when they retested him, then he tested positive for signs of both these COVID-19 genes. So therefore, he was, you know, put into isolation. And well, you know, he's obviously got to wait it out for the next 10 days and self isolate and do what he needs to do. And hopefully that it doesn't go any further than that. That you know, it's been caught in time, and he can just take care of himself over the next 10 days to 2 weeks, and hope it just it passes that way. But it is like I say, it's fascinating just from you know, an outside point of view, that now that they have the protocols in place, that that just Perez and his immediate bubble were removed, and you know, now you got Nico Hülkenberg coming in to replace him, that it seems to have been, at least from you know, an outside perspective, fairly smooth and seamless. And I guess the bigger question is, are the protocols that they have in place sufficient enough that you know, the virus is contained to Sergio Perez and hopefully nobody else within his bubble, and certainly nobody else within the team or within the paddock itself. And of course, you know, there is a 7 to 14 day incubation period, so we might see some additional things happen over the next several days to 2 weeks, and hopefully not. Let's hope that they've nipped in the bud. But as we've seen in other sports, especially Major League Baseball, as they've gotten their season up and running, that it is happening. I mean, there are players testing positive for this all the time. And on Thursday, the Buffalo Bills had a number of players test positive. They sent their rookies home from training camp and all that. So it is, sports is not immune, even though they're doing their very best. And Well, we'll wait and see. Anyways, let's move along now and talk. Let's talk about what else is on the news. And a lot of it is COVID related. And just before we go into the break here, just want to talk about how Silverstone, the track, has said their business has actually been set back at least 5 years because of the impact of the paddock. Anyways, Stuart Pringle, who is the president of Silverstone, had to say, quote, "It's like a big game of snakes and ladders. We've been crawling up a very long ladder and it's been getting very tiring, but now we're just going back all the way back down the snake, and it set our business back about 5 years in terms of balance sheets positions." So yeah, I mean, it's been a very, very difficult time for everybody, and Formula One and motorsport has not been immune, obviously. All right, time for a break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
While sports can bring us so much joy, it can also bring us a lot of unwanted stress. And that stress can make it difficult to concentrate, relax, and get decent sleep. Sunday Scaries was launched in 2017 by two best friends and business partners, Bo Schmidt and Mike Sill. They operated a full-service bar with 50 employees and were always exhausted. They tried all kinds of products, but they didn't work. Then they started experimenting with CBD. They loved the effects and regained control of their days and nights, but they wanted better CBD products. So what they did for themselves was specially formulate CBD gummies with vitamins D3 and B12 that were super consumable, easy to take on the go, and effective. Long story short, their specially formulated CBD products and vitamins helped relieve the overwhelming angst they felt on a daily basis. So in July 2017, they named the company Sunday Scaries and began sharing their products with friends and launched their online store at sundayscaries.com. With tens of thousands of customers, monthly subscribers, and a 100% money-back guarantee, Sunday Scaries has always been on a mission to transform a worrisome nation into a chill one. And right now, we have a bonus for you. Get 25% off all products at sundayscaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME. Again, 25% off all products at sundayscaries.com when you use the code OVERTIME.
Hey guys, this is Greg Peterson, host of the podcast Hoopin' with Hoops. Despite the fact that college basketball is in the offseason, it's never too early to get a jump start on taking a look at these teams, because there is now 357 of them for the upcoming 2020-2021 college basketball season. I'm going to give you guys a deep dive on every last one of them, keep up with all the transfers in college basketball, and so much more. You are able to subscribe to Hoopin' with Hoops on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to Scuderia F1, the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. So just sticking with the topic we were talking about before we went into the break just now is some of this COVID-related fallout that is impacting Formula One. And there's news coming out of Brazil, that their promoter, Tomás Rohanyi, says that due to the cancellation of the Brazilian Grand Prix, it's possible that that motorsports will hurt the country's racing future. And I find that quite shocking. But obviously, it's had a lot of impact on people. Anyways, Rohanyi had to say, quote, "A lot of people depend on this, not only in F1, but all the other categories. I like to believe it's an important venue, if only because of the tradition we have here. Brazilian drivers have won 8 times the world championship. Frankly, I spoke to the president of the Brazilian ASN, and he said to me, if you lose a race, Brazilian motor racing will be dead for the next 40 years. Because all these kids who drive karts, they hope one day to go to F1, but they will stop." End quote. So, hopefully not. Of course, Brazil has been another one of these countries that has been severely impacted by COVID. But it is sad that a lot of these races have been canceled, but hopefully that this is just a temporary thing, and the loss of the race of a year and hopefully not beyond 2020 is not going to have a huge impact on Brazil and the racing drivers there. Anyways, Rohanyi also went on. He was quite angry about that. He had to say, quote, "First of all, this cancellation caught us not by surprise, but I must say the justification, the reasoning behind it, we cannot accept. They talk about the virus infection rate in Brazil, which is like comparing California California to Florida and a country like Brazil, which is a lot of continental dimensions. We have all the numbers for state and the city of Sao Paulo. This data has been submitted to the FIA Medical Commission by our own medical officer, who, by the way, is its vice president. And they are very good figures. In fact, if you look at the figures of Sao Paulo, even Brazil, in a proportional base compared to England, it's much better. So when you read the cancellation notice we got from the FOM yesterday, it just doesn't stand up. It's clearly sort of an almost invented reasoning to cancel this race, end quote. Yeah, well, obviously, very disappointing. I quite enjoyed the Brazilian Grand Prix. Health and safety has to come first, but I can certainly understand and empathize with Roigny's disappointment and frustration in having the event canceled, especially when he is saying that the numbers proportionally are actually quite good in that part of the country, but the Brazilian Grand Prix was scheduled for a couple of months out. Who knows if that had something to do with it, but you know, we've all had to put up with that. I mean, we're looking at a very improvised racing schedule here, and it's already changed a number of times with the races that have been canceled, new races added, and it's probably going to change again before the year is done. And it is going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out between now and the end of the year, probably, hopefully sometime in November, with the traditional season finale in Abu Dhabi. And if we can get that far and if they can pull it off, I think it will be absolutely phenomenal. And, honestly, I think it would be quite an epic achievement if they can pull it off. Anyways, the promoters of the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, which is set to take place in the first weekend of September, 6 September is going to be the date of the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. They have announced that the race will actually take place behind closed doors with no fans permitted to attend the event. So the bosses of Formula One have been optimistic about getting fans to the races by the autumn. I mean, we're still obviously in the middle of summer here in the Northern Hemisphere, but they're actually selling tickets for September's Russian Grand Prix at the Sochi Autodrome, and they're hoping to have tens of thousands of people in attendance for the Portuguese Grand Prix at Portimão in October. So that's a couple of months out. Hopefully that will happen. Apparently, F1 was trying to get people into the stands at the Italian Grand Prix at the beginning of September, with just a limited number of people. But it's just not going to happen. And the race organizers at Monza announced on Wednesday that it is going to be a closed door event, which obviously disappointing for the people that want to go. And at least from a TV point of view, I mean, it looks a little bit weird to see all these empty venues, but NHL started again just this week, and it looks strange that these arenas are empty. The same with any other sport as well, but Formula One, it's working for me, to be quite honest. I can get over the fact that the stands are empty, and I think they've been innovative in some ways to put some of these big banners over the empty seats, or like we saw at the grandstand at the last corner at the Red Bull Ring. For the second race, they put some of these colored lights up there that would, they put up the driver's names and numbers and kind of have a bit of a light show. I thought that was kind of cool, but I mean, the focus is always what's happening on the track, and at least from that point of view, that despite it kind of feels like, it obviously is lacking an atmosphere and lacking that, the real vibe you get with a packed, racetrack full of Formula One fans. It doesn't really diminish it in my eyes watching it a whole lot. It is strange, but for me, it works. Anyways, there was a statement that was released by the organizers of the Italian Grand Prix, and they had to say, quote, the 2020 Formula One Italian Grand Prix at the Autodromo Nazionale Monza from 4 to 6 September will take place behind closed doors, i.e. without spectators. Tickets already purchased will be refunded for the full value on the face price shown on them, end quote. So The Tuscan Grand Prix, which is going to go at Mugello the week after that, there is maybe a possibility where Formula One could get some fans into the grandstand, but even so, that would be a very limited number. And I'm really looking forward to seeing some of these tracks that we don't get to see very often or at all. Imola, Mugello, Portimao, Nürburgring. As I spoke about last week, Nürburgring obviously has a special place in my Formula One heart. So looking forward to that. And we'll see how some of the rest of the schedule pans out. But if they can actually get people back into the stands, even in limited numbers, I think that would be that would be quite the achievement. It might be kind of strange to be sitting there in the stands 50 feet away from the next people, but it would, I think, just from a moral point of view, like it would be a real, a morale boost, I should say, a morale booster to see people back there if it can be done safely. Anyways, Lando Norris, the McLaren driver, says driving in front of fanless Grand Prix stands is a lot like Formula Renault races. Lando had to say, quote, "I've missed them a lot. I've missed the whole atmosphere from them. You know, it feels a lot more like a race in Formula Renault, where you go and there's not that many fans, or sometimes like Formula 3, you go to the racetracks and there just aren't many fans. And it's almost a bit like karting in some ways, where you just go there to race rather than to put on a great show for anyone, so it's weird. And it's something that every driver, I'm sure, even the engineers and the mechanics, they miss the atmosphere from it and seeing the emotion from the fans," end quote. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I pick up on it myself, like I was saying, just watching the TV, but you know, it still works. It's still racing. It's still, 20 Formula One cars out there, fighting out on the tracks. And I'm not going to complain. Considering what we've all been through and what we continue to go through, COVID and everything else, Formula One and sports in general, it is a nice distraction to have a couple of hours at a time. And I know this, we can make the argument for first world problems and things like that, but you know, whatever. It certainly is a way to disengage from the stresses and the pressures and all the problems that that we're facing the other 22 hours of the day or whatever it might be. So if we can get races going without fans, with fans, and even if there are multiple races at the same track, I'm perfectly okay with it for the time being. Anyways, sticking with Lando Norris, I just wanted to bring this one up because we were just talking about the Italian Grand Prix. He says he doesn't expect much overtaking at Mugello, what he calls an awesome track to drive. Lando to say, quote, "I look forward to it. Mugello, I raced in an Italian F4 back in 2015, I think, and it was really cool. It's very high speed or medium to high speed corners, no real tight chicanes, almost like Austria in some ways, without the big braking zones on top of it. These high-speed, medium-speed corners test the physical attributes of the driver to the limit. This is F1 to the limit in terms of how quick F1 cars are around these types of corners. It may not be the best for racing. I don't know if you'll probably see any overtakes between turn one and the last corner, so I think it's almost going to be like Hungary in some ways. But at the same time, it's an awesome track, so qualifying I think will be incredible," end quote. So we'll wait and see. It's going to only just over a month until we get to Mugello. So really looking forward to it. So apparently Imola is also eyeing a place on the schedule and hoping to get back into Formula One for 2021. Right now, Imola is on the on the schedule for the last weekend in October, beginning of November, which is traditionally Mexican Grand Prix time. So a little bit different. Sad not to be in Mexico and this year, but we will have the Emilia Romagna GP at Imola on from the 31st of October to November 1st, and they are looking to get back on the schedule for next year. And I just have nothing but praise and good things to say to the people that have worked so hard to put this schedule together. I mean, when they announced the first number of races, I guess even up until Monza, I kept thinking for the longest time, maybe that's all we're going to get. That might be the world championship, is this really abbreviated sprint, really short season in the summer. But the fact that that they're still adding races, and we might get Bahrain and Abu Dhabi at the end of the season, I think that if we can get somewhere close to this 15 to 18 race season that they're hoping for, I think that that would be just absolutely amazing if they can pull it off. Like I say, they are looking for a spot on the schedule next year, and Salvatico Atense, who is the manager at Imola, he had to say, quote, "We have been looking for this goal for many years. We have talked with the F1 management people for a long time, and now we've achieved the target that we've tried to get. I think our heritage is so important. We are so famous for F1 that this opportunity came true, not only because of COVID, but also because F1 needs to come back to the historical tracks, back to the real passion of F1 fans. We are trying to apply to F1 for an opportunity for next year, but there's everything to discuss after the race, I think. Our will is very clear. We are driven by our passion," end quote. Yeah, well, I do maintain that Formula One absolutely needs these historic tracks on the schedule each and every year. To me, it just seems weird that you wouldn't have a German Grand Prix. You wouldn't have a French Grand Prix. I mean, we've been back to Paul Ricard a couple of years now, but it's been many years without a French Grand Prix. And to me, it just Formula One wouldn't be the same, especially if you didn't have like Silverstone or British Grand Prix. I mean, some of these have to be staples each and every year. I'm all for adding new venues, new tracks to it. I mean, there's some great tracks that Formula One go to, and they couldn't be without now too. But I think you really have to strike that balance between the old and the new, and you have to have these famous ones. You need your Monzas, you need your Spas, you need your Silverstones and tracks like that. But on the flip side, I love a lot of these new tracks as well. I really love the Singapore Grand Prix. I think it's cool. I like some of the races we see in the desert as well. And for me, I'm really looking forward to seeing the Vietnamese Grand Prix in Hanoi, should that ever get off the ground. And looking forward to going back to Zandvoort. Obviously, that's not a new one, but the redesigned bank corner at Zandvoort, and the first time we're going to have a Dutch Grand Prix since the 1980s, I think that's going to be cool as well. And anytime we see newer tracks come in, I mean, there's one point a year or so ago that Chase Carey was saying that they had up to 40 different venues expressing interest in hosting a Grand Prix. So, I mean, there's obviously lots of racetracks around the world and a lot of interest for races, but we'll see whether or not Imola sticks on the schedule for 2021 or not. Anyways, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just one moment.
Hey guys, Greg Peterson here with the Baseball Betting Podcast. As we know, the MLB season is back in our lives. It's going to be a 60-game sprint unlike anything that we've ever seen before, and I'm going to be giving you picks every single day, 7 days a week, with Major League Baseball. We're also going to be keeping up with the KBO as well. If you like baseball and you like being able to make some money, subscribe to the Baseball Betting Podcast with Greg Peterson on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show, and just to pick up where we just left off before the break, so we do have 13 rounds officially confirmed for the season thus far. Obviously, we've had 2 weekends at the Red Bull Ring under our belt, Hungaroring 2 weeks ago, and we got 2 weekends at Silverstone coming up. After that, we have Barcelona, Spa, Monza, Mugello, Sochi, Nürburgring at the beginning of October, Portimao October 25th, and then rounding out the confirmed races, Imola on November 1st. Now, the canceled races, obviously the list is long, was Australia, Zandvoort, Monaco, Baku, Montreal, Paul Ricard, the Singapore Grand Prix, the Japanese Grand Prix, the U.S. Grand Prix, the Mexican Grand Prix, and the Brazilian Grand Prix. So the Chinese Grand Prix in Shanghai is not officially canceled, but unlikely to be held. It's still still possible that we might see some more added at the end of the year, with two races in Bahrain, followed by the finale in Abu Dhabi. And it is possible that the Vietnamese Grand Prix and Malaysia may actually come back with possible races at those two tracks in what will be an expanded leg of the Asian portion of the Formula One season. So that, you know, is interesting. I mean, we haven't been in Malaysia for a couple of years, and obviously they'd raced there for a very, very long time before that that one kind of fell by the wayside. So it's good to see that some of these tracks are, you know, going to be available, obviously, but also able to host Formula One. Talking about just the British Grand Prix, apparently racing in reverse on the track at Silverstone was never an option, and that comes courtesy of Silverstone's boss, Stuart Pringle, saying that using the alternative layouts or running the race in reverse were never really seriously considered in the you know, this ad hoc Formula One season. Anyways, Pringle had to say, quote, "Well, it wasn't really a serious idea because Silverstone is about the Grand Prix circuit. You can't go the other way around. That was just me mischievously not shutting down and drilling us quickly enough, but that was great because that ran for 3 or 4 weeks and kept our name out there. We are a handed circuit. We cannot go the other way around. And actually, if we raced on the international layout, then you would just get half the good corners twice as often. You haven't suddenly got a new, different configuration. Whatever we do is a slice paring down, and they weren't going to go racing around the national layout, and they'd end up very dizzy, so it was never taken seriously," end quote. So, yeah, that was kind of interesting. I mean, that that was out there, but it's interesting now that that it was you know, admitted by the person that said it himself, that it was wasn't really a serious thing to say. So apparently, Pringle also said that they offered to host 12 Formula One races over a period of months to help Formula One organize sort of a piece together 2020 calendar that was obviously thrown into complete disarray because of COVID and all the things that were going on over the past several months. And he had to say, quote, "We said we'll support however we can within the grounds of reasonableness. But at one stage, we offered to make the track available for a period of months. If they could get a championship away from one location at one stage, it looked like nothing could happen. And the answer was a ship in the Italian teams and the Swiss teams and the Pirelli guys and park them at Silverstone for a couple of months and run 12 races around Silverstone and make television if that's what we need. The view was actually taken pretty quickly that it would be a bit dull, but they came back and said actually two would be quite helpful," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, 12 races, you know, kudos, props to him for offering it. But I think that would have, don't think that would have worked. I mean, having the doubleheader in Austria obviously worked. But by the time we got to the end of the second race, the so-called Styrian Grand Prix, I'd pretty much had my fill. And even Andreas Seidel, who's the team principal at McLaren, said that triple headers cannot become the new standard in F1's future calendars, even though that you know, they've become a thing this weekend. Anyways, Seidel had to say, "We're going now into the triple header with these two races in the UK, which is obviously for the UK teams is not as bad as for some of the other teams. At least we have the possibility to arrive at the track as late as possible with only a short travel and having a break between these two Silverstone races. Then we go into another triple header, and then at the moment, I think on the schedule, there's another triple header later on, which I think is tough. Given the special circumstances we are in this year, I think it's something we have to get through this year. But at the same time, this cannot be the new standard going forward, but also in future seasons." So, yeah, obviously, I think he's getting more. I sort of misread that originally when I made my notes. He's not talking about having a number of races at the same track. He's just talking about triple header weekends where you have three races in a row. I mean, it was pretty cool. I mean, to have the first three races of the year, two in Austria, one in Hungary, you know, weekend after weekend after weekend. I mean, we saw it a couple of years ago. Where, what did we have now? I think it was the British, German, and French Grand Prix or something like that. It was all one, you know, in three consecutive weekends in July, because I remember it was the same time as the FIFA World Cup. So, I mean, it was absolutely epic. You had that going on. You had Formula One triple header weekends going on. You had the Tour de France going on. Plus, you had basketball, baseball, everything else that you get going on in the summer. So, I mean, it was sports fans' absolute dream. But obviously, when you're racing in consecutive weekends, back to back to back like that, that puts a lot of strain, not just logistically, but also physically and mentally, probably emotionally, I think, on all the people involved. But he's also right. It is a unique year that we are in right now because of this bizarre COVID landscape that we live in. And it's just something that we're going to have to work through over the course of this year. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit now about the race that's coming up before we finish this segment in the show. So the FIA is going to clamp down on track limits at Silverstone this weekend with a specific focus on cops and stow corners. And in the pre-event notes for the British Grand Prix, race director Michael Massey said that any driver that goes behind the black and white curbs on the exits of turns 9 and 15 will have their lap times deleted. And it doesn't matter if it's in practice, qualifying, or even the race itself. And he went on to say that multiple offenses, regardless if they happen at the same corner or not, will result in a black and white flag being shown to that driver. Anyways, Massey had to say a lap time achieved during any practice session or the track or the race by leaving the track and cutting behind the black and white curb on the exit of turn 9-15 will result in that lap time being invalidated by the stewards. Each time any car passes behind the black and white exit curbs, teams will be informed via the official messaging system. On the third occasion of a driver cutting behind the black and white exit curbs at turns 9 and 15 during the race, he will be shown a black and white flag, and any further cutting will then be reported to the stewards. For the avoidance of doubt, this means a total of 3 occasions combined, not 3 at each corner. The above requirements will not automatically apply to any driver who is judged to have been forced off the track. Each case will be judged individually, end quote. So there you go. Obviously, they want to crack down on that quite a bit. And we've seen that, over the past couple of races. And I think that that they have to, they have to do that. I mean, if people are getting an advantage, I mean, you got to stick between the two white lines between on the asphalt. I mean, if you're going too crazy, then that's just not right. I mean, it was kind of fun to watch some of these virtual Grand Prix that we saw over the past several months, especially when it was not the Chinese Grand Prix, I think it was, when you saw some of these bizarre lines that the guys were taking when playing video games, especially at Shanghai. When you come out of that last corner, they'd run really, really wide onto the runoff area just at the start of the final corner going into start finish, and obviously they don't do that in real life at all. So it's not a video game, guys. Stick to the stick between the white lines, and you're not going to get punished for it. So anyways, Red Bull, they're planning to run a big trial of new parts at Silverstone this weekend. Apparently the RB16 has what the Red Bull are calling some anomalies that they're trying to figure out, and they're obviously a little bit disappointed that the car has not really delivered what they were hoping to be more of a challenger to Mercedes, at least through the first three races of the season. So Max Verstappen and Alex Albon, they're prepared that the team might need a little bit of time to sort everything out, but they're really hoping that the new parts they're bringing to Silverstone will help deliver some move forward, some progress to closing the gap between themselves and Mercedes-Benz. Max Verstappen had to say, quote, "I think we are still learning. We're bringing a lot of new parts to the car. They are different parts to see what works, what doesn't, and where we can still improve. I mean, this is, of course, not from one week to the other that this is going to be solved. We need a bit more time for that, but yeah, we're working on it, and we'll just find out by trying it on track as well to know if we're heading in the right direction," end quote. So yeah, a bit disappointing, obviously, that they haven't been closer to Mercedes this year. I mean, if you kind of look at going back a couple of races, the way that Valtteri Bottas really just cruised by Max Verstappen, I mean, he was only really held up for one lap towards the end of the race there, and he did come very close to catching him at the final few laps of the Hungarian Grand Prix 2 weeks ago, but he needed a couple more laps to do it. So very, very interesting that that they're still trying to figure it out, and hopefully they can get, you know, they can figure it out. I mean, it is going to be, obviously, like we've said all along, going to be a strange season just because of the way that it's really unfolded because of COVID and all these sorts of things. But I really hoped that somebody would have been closer to Mercedes, and Red Bull has been, at least from that point, a little bit disappointing so far. Anyways, Valtteri Bottas is going to have his rev lights changed after his jump start at the Hungarian Grand Prix, which he put down to watching the wrong lights on his dashboard rather than the red lights on the gantry above the start finish straight. So that obviously he didn't get penalized for that, but the damage was done, wasn't it? It was more of a self-imposed penalty rather than a time penalty issued by the stewards due to the fact he was a little bit, he jumped the gun, so to speak, and he lost several places off the start, even though he was, he was in good place to challenge his teammate. And obviously it cost him a whole bunch of points potentially. And who knows, at the end of the year, that could be one of those instances when you're looking, well, I finished third in that race, probably should have finished at least second, had a good shot to maybe win this one. But, if he loses the championship to Lewis Hamilton by a handful of points by the time the year is done, that might be one of those races that he looks back on and really rues the mistake that he made before the race even started. Anyways, Martin Brundle has put down that there's any sort of conspiracy theory going on regarding a recent interview that he did with Sebastian Vettel, and that really sort of sowed the seeds that Seb was getting ready to announce his retirement. Anyways, Brundle had to say, quote, "I met him on the corner of the TV compound in Austria. He was heading off somewhere. We were in our masks, socially distanced, and he said, let's do an interview. So I said, okay, let's do that. What do you want to talk about? He said, you make it up. I said, okay, I'll make it up. Let's do an interview. And that was it. Then I stupidly mentioned that because David Croft was supposed to throw to Ted Kravitz in the grandstand, and he missed, as obviously we got completely different systems to what we would normally have at a Grand Prix. Somehow Crofty thought he had to throw it to me. I was walking back out, and I just heard something about Vettel, and I said, oh yeah, sorry, I didn't know you'd come to me, Crofty. Vettel, yeah, actually, he's asked me for an interview. Of course, I turned to Sebastian, turned into Sebastian Vettel is going to retire. He's asked Brundle for an interview. It was nothing more cunning than that. And it was my own stupidity because I was suddenly live on air and I wasn't expecting to be. If that fills you in on how it all came about, there was nothing, as so often happens in these stories, then there's nothing more exciting than that," end quote. So who knows? I mean, only Vettel and Brundle will actually know. But I can tell you for a fact that these impromptu interviews do happen in professional sports, and I've experienced that myself in the coverage I've done in Major League Soccer over the years, especially if these guys, they see you around, you talk to them, you ask them questions at practice after the games, they see you at the different facilities, and sometimes with some guys are into it, some guys aren't, some guys you sort of build up a little bit of rapport with, and I've had guys come up to me many times in the past. They'll see you standing around, maybe waiting for a press conference or a media scrum to begin, and I've had guys come over and say, hey, you want to talk, you want to do an interview, and some guys are really gung-ho, and some guys just hate doing the media stuff unless they're asked to do it as part of the requirements, and other guys are really into it. So I can honestly say that I can't confirm obviously what happened with Martin Brundle, but I don't necessarily dismiss what out of hand what he said, because I've seen it, I've experienced it myself. Anyways, time for one more final break here on the show. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show. Danny Ricciardo, former teammate of Sebastian Vettel. Obviously, they raced a couple of years together at Red Bull Racing several years ago. Said that Seb will need patience and an open mind if he's going to make the most of a challenge of potentially shifting over to Aston Martin next year. And so this is still ongoing. It's out there. I mean, both parties admit that there have been talks ongoing. And so we'll see over the days and weeks to come whether or not this becomes a thing or not, and Seb actually goes there. We know obviously he's not going to be at Ferrari, because that was confirmed several months ago that that is done and he is finished at the end of the year, and will be replaced by Carlos Sainz. Any Danny Ric had to say about the whole potential Aston Martin move for Sebastian Vettel as the following, quote, "I think for Seb, in his situation, he's had pretty much his whole career in the sport running at the front. Probably every year he's contested in Formula One, he's been on the podium more or less. So if he goes in the midfield team, it's foreign territory for him. I think it requires a bit more of an open mind, certainly some patience, but yeah, that's obviously up to him and where he sees his next chapter of his career," end quote. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Seb won 4 world championships with Red Bull. He's had some success at Ferrari. Obviously that world championship has eluded him there. But still, I mean, you know, he's always had a pretty competitive car. Well, and Ferrari this year and probably last year as well, that is obviously not the case. But certainly, I mean, he's always been in a pretty good position. I mean, he was, you know, in Red Bull when they were at their best, and has a whole bunch of world championships to show for it. So that is the big question, is whether or not he wants to take on this challenge now at this, you know, this point in his career, or if he decides to, you know, hang up his helmet and racing gloves and call it a day. Anyways, Vettel himself says he's absolutely not in a rush to make a decision about his future as he weighs up his options, you know, for 2021. And he had to say, quote, he had no answer. And he went on to say he would give an answer if he had one, but he doesn't have one at the moment. And he's just going to be patient for the time being and wait it out. So he says it could be anywhere from a couple of weeks. It could be longer than that. And he said that nothing has changed at all in the situation over the past several weeks since you know, the first couple of races. So who knows? It would be interesting. I would kind of be sad to see Sebastian Vettel go out of Formula One. I've been hard on him over the years, especially when he's been in this tough place with Ferrari and had some, obviously, some very poor moments he would like to take back. I'm very, very sure. But when you're a 4-time world championship or champion, I'm gonna hold you to a higher standard than some of these other guys, especially guys that that are down at the bottom of the grid, or guys that we just you know, in my mind are a bit questionable talent wise and Sebastian Vettel. Yeah, I'm gonna hold him to that that higher standard, but still, I would you know, I'd be a bit disappointed to see him go. Even if it you know, he was to go to a team like Aston Martin, it might be a difficult move for you know, like Danny Ricciardo was saying, going from a front running team to a midfield team. But as we've seen with the, you know, what is Racing Point and is going to be Aston Martin next year, they've done very, very well, and they've had some encouraging results this year. Whether or not that car is 100% legit and legal, that is a completely different story, and that will play out over the coming weeks and hopefully not months. Anyways, Andreas Seidel from McLaren said he would like Formula One's technical regulations to be tightened up to limit the extent to which other teams can copy other cars, and this is just more fallout and just you know, the same story of Renault, who have protested the legality of the Racing Point RP20, which is you know, they've been pretty open about how they've based it on the design of you know, last year's Mercedes W10. Seidel said that there are no grounds for protest against Racing Point, but he said he feels that it's an important case for the future of Formula One, because it risks what he calls becoming a copying championship. And yeah, that is interesting. I mean, you know, Ross Brawn was saying last week that that copying goes on, or the you know, people you know, copying the different concepts in Formula One. You know, it does happen. You know, quite often, and we've seen it over the you know, over the past, and I'm sure we'll see it again. That if somebody comes up with a winning concept, that other teams and other designers are quick to jump on that, and even Dietmar Safnauer, the team principal of Racing Point, was saying last week that that he was honestly surprised that other teams actually hadn't jumped on board to do the same thing and try and copy that same concept that that they've come up with the W10, right? Anyways, Martin Brundle says that he finds it difficult to believe that Racing Point managed to copy the W10 so well, but he actually went on to give the team some credit, saying that they did an extraordinary job. Yeah, it is interesting that he should say that, and the exact quote is as follows. Quote, "To replicate a car that works is stretching my imagination on that. Having said that, they do buy, in a legitimate way, the engine and gearbox, which fixes your rear suspension pickup points and suspension elements. They buy everything they can. There's an awful lot of reference points on the car that they legitimately buy, and it's just there are bits underneath aero parts and all that. When they created this, they had to finesse it, so they've done an extraordinary job," end quote. Yeah, I mean, if you go back to what Otmar Safnauer was saying last week, yeah, they have obviously blatantly gone out and used the W10 as inspiration and as that that model for the car that that Racing Point has designed and built and is running this year. But he said that even though the car is doing well so far, we've seen some very very good performances from them over the past the first three races of the season. But he admitted that that it was several steps back from where they were at the end of last year with the car that they had, and when they took on this new design concept. So there was that risk there. He openly admitted that there was a risk to following this design route to using this this model of the W10 and applying it to their own car. So I have to go with the I have to side with Racing Point, because I just have to believe that if there's just too much at stake in terms of reputations, in money, in penalties, and all these different things that that would have to happen if this car was actually a blatant copy of the W10. I think that if that was the case, heads would roll. It would ruin people's careers, their reputations in Formula One, and things like that. Not to mention all the negative repercussions that the team itself would face. And not only that, is like, where did they get the concepts, the actual data from? So I'm more from the stance that they used it as a model. They used the concepts, they tried to apply it to their own car, and of course they're always taking pictures. I mean, Ross Brawn was talking about that too in the interview he did last week, that they would pay people to go out there to take all these different pictures of their rivals, and then they would study them in detail. And again, I think that there's just too much at stake for it to be an outright control C, control V, and whip some pink and white livery on there, and the sponsors that they have. Anyways, Ferrari, going back to the cost saving measures that were discussed and implemented over the past several months, they proposed going back to customer cars in Formula One to help safeguard the future of the sport, only to have this suggestion to be rejected by the entire rest of the Formula One grid, which I think is a little bit shocking on a couple of fronts, because I just kind of struggle a little bit to think that Ferrari would have done that at all in the old days, made that suggestion. But I'm surprised that the other teams dismissed it outright. Anyways, Matteo Binotto, Ferrari team principal, had to say, quote, "On what should be the future, during the COVID discussions as Ferrari, we brought as a proposal to consider customer teams from the big teams, as we eventually did in MotoGP. But that proposal was pushed back, I think, by the entirety of the teams of the Formula One, of the FIA, which we fully understand. I think that has been a decision which we all took together," end quote. So anyways, that is interesting to hear that, but Obviously, it didn't work. Anyways, Johan Elkann, the chairman of Ferrari, says he does not expect the team to be winning in Formula One until at least 2022, and is asked for patience from what he calls the team's suffering fans. He was speaking to the Italian newspaper Gazzetta dello Sport about Ferrari's recent form, and says that it will not be until the new rules come into effect in 2022 that they can really realistically expect to be at the front of the grid. Anyways, he had to say, quote, "Ferrari is going through a difficult period that starts far back. We have not won a Constructors' World Championship since 2008, nor a Drivers' one since 2007. There have been Red Bull winning cycles thanks to aerodynamic capacity, and then Mercedes for their great ability in hybrid engine technologies. This year, we are just not competitive thanks to project errors. We have had a number of structural weaknesses that have existed in some time in aerodynamics and in the dynamics of the vehicle. We have also lost out in engine power. The reality is that our car is not competitive. You saw it on the track, and you will see it again. Today, we are laying the foundations for being competitive and returning to winning when the rules change in 2022. I am convinced of this," end quote. So disappointing to hear that if you're a Ferrari fan. But again, maybe not the most shocking admission, but still, if they're saying that they're not expecting to win until that time, that feels like that could be a little bit, quite a time out if you're a Ferrari fan. Anyway, so let's just quickly take a look at some of the results last year from the British Grand Prix as we start to shut it down now. Last year's race was won by Lewis Hamilton, led his teammate home by a very impressive 24.9 seconds. Charles Leclerc rounded out the podium. The top 10 going on down there was Pierre Gasly in fourth for Red Bull, Max Verstappen in fifth, Carlos Sainz in sixth for McLaren, Danny Ricciardo seventh for Renault, Kimi Raikkonen in Alfa Romeo, Danny Kvyat getting into the top 10 for the Scuderia Toro Rosso, who are now AlphaTauri, and then Nico Hülkenberg rounding out the top 10. So last year's race will be probably remembered, I think, most for the coming together of Sebastian Vettel and Max Verstappen just before going into Club Corner there. That was obviously quite spectacular. Qualifying was as follows. We had Valtteri Bottas on pole, just ahead of his teammate Lewis Hamilton. Then you had a second row of Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen. Row three, you had Pierre Gasly and Sebastian Vettel, and Danny Ricciardo and Lando Norris on row four. And then row five, you had Alex Albon and Nico Hülkenberg. Anyways, Silverstone, one of my favorite tracks, especially when you get to that complex of corners from 10 to 13, going through Maggots, Beckett's, then down into Chapel. Then you have Hangar Straight all the way down into Stowe. Obviously, that's pretty iconic and just impressive the way that these cars really throw themselves through the corners. And again, also you get that very fast right-hander after you go through start finish into turn one at Abbey. Very, very impressive and just a lot of fun to watch if you're a Formula One fan. So the circuit itself is 5.891 kilometers or 3.66 miles in lengths. And we have a total of 52 laps or 306.198 kilometers or 190.263 miles. So there you go. Last year, Lewis Hamilton set the fastest lap of 127.369, and compare that to Bottas's pole time of 125.093. So, should be one to look out for. And do we dare bet against Lewis Hamilton this weekend? I think not. I think it's going to be Lewis Hamilton winning, Valtteri Bottas coming home second, and Lando Norris. Let's put Lando up on the podium. I'm feeling it this weekend for Lando. We'll talk again in a couple of days after we do a post-race for this report for this Grand Prix and see whether or not my predictions come true. And until then, that's a wrap. Thank you very much for listening to the show this week. If you want to get in touch, please do so. Send me a tweet at ScuderiaF1Pod or email me at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. Thank you so much. Enjoy the British Grand Prix, and we'll be back in a couple of days to wrap it up and talk all about it. Until then, take care, have fun, enjoy the Grand Prix. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 Podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.